Hi, this is Ananda, president of the Hare Krishna community near Washington, D.C. What follows is a Sunday talk recorded at our temple. Every Sunday, we invite the public for meditation, a talk, and a vegetarian lunch. We'd love for you to join us. More information is available at isconofdc.org. That's ISKCON of DC.org. Thanks, and I hope you enjoy the talk.
It's a great privilege to be back here. I'll simply read one verse from the Bhagavad Gita and two lines from a very long purport below it. Yeyatamam prapadyante tangs tataiva bhajamyaham mambavart manuvartante manushya partha sarvashaha. As all surrender unto me, or as we submit ourselves or offer ourselves to Krishna, he says, I reward them accordingly. Specifically, bhajami, I love them back accordingly. I reciprocate with them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, O Sanapritta. The first line that Prabhupada writes, everyone is searching for Krishna in the different aspects of his manifestations. The penultimate line in the purport is, in other words, everyone is dependent for success upon his mercy alone, and all kinds of spiritual processes are but different degrees of success on the spiritual path. On the same path. I'm reading this verse because, as we'll discuss in a little bit, to understand the appearance of Mahaprabhu Gauranga is to appreciate how Krishna, in this verse, breaks his promise. According to Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswaman, Krishna states this, that he will always reciprocate the love of his devotee. But there's one instance in which he breaks his promise. He cannot fully reciprocate the love of his devotee. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. But first, I'd like to speak to the title of today's talk on this very auspicious day of Gaur Purnima. And that is, what are the special gifts that Mahaprabhu gives us? What is it that is unique in our tradition? And I ask this because Prabhupada himself says, all true religious traditions, all true spiritual traditions possess bhakti. They all have bhakti. So then the question would be, if they all have bhakti, why don't we just go to any tradition? Why don't we just take up the practice and theological vision of any tradition? So I want to speak to that special and unique gift that Mahaprabhu gives us in our tradition. As all of us know, 500 years ago, Mahaprabhu appeared. And his, of course, external purpose for coming and for appearing is to inaugurate the Sankirtan, the practice of Sankirtan. And we all know the story. Mahaprabhu with his dearest friends are in Srivas Thakur's house. And they had a habit of going there and chanting every day. But one day, they could not stop. And it went all night long. And then, if that weren't enough, the intensity built up so strongly that they went bursting out of his home in Navadvip into the streets, chanting Krishna's names. So this was the beginning of really true Nagar Kirtan. There were, in ancient times, strolling minstrels singing bhakti songs, filled with bhakti. That was going on for centuries. But the whole idea of congregational chanting and congregational chanting in the streets, this was something that had really never been seen before prior to this event in Srivast Thakur's house. And so when the devotees go into major cities of the Western world and reenact this event that happened at Srivast Thakur's house, most people don't realize that this is an historical reenactment. This is not just some crazies that got together and decided just to do some street dancing, but rather this is something that goes back historically deep into sacred India's practices and history. So we need to educate people on what it is that we're doing when we are chanting on the streets. Now, of course, we don't start in the temple chanting and then it spills out into the front lawn here, and then somehow we all sort of pile into vans and just burst out of the vans into the street. It's a little more organized than that, I think, right? But on the other hand, we need to understand that this is a reenactment of the highest level of ecstasy in the chanting of God's names. We need to enter into that mood to celebrate what has occurred initially so many years ago. So that is the external reason for Mahaprabhu's appearance. On an historical level, he appears as something of a madman. On an historical level, he's born in a certain place at a certain time, in a certain era, in medieval India, and historians have even traced what an unusual personality he is, even historically speaking. There's no one ever quite like it. And in fact, one historian claims that he is different from all other divine manifestations, and that normally divine manifestations are recognized after they've gone, after they've left. But it was within Mahaprabhu's lifetime that he was noticed as such. So this is, even externally speaking, historians have observed this, which I think is quite marvelous. But what are the internal reasons for Mahaprabhu's appearance? What was going on inside of him while he was externally performing the Nagar Kirtan, while he was chanting names, and sometimes wildly? Well, now we need to get back to Krishna's broken promise here, okay? Well, what Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswaman says is that in the in Krishna's dealings with the Vraja Gopikas, in the great Ras Lila, the five chapters devoted to the Rasa dance and the events leading up to the Rasa dance, Krishna is amazed at the Gopikas' love and devotion to him. He is just astonished. And I'll read to you the verse. Let's see. Two verses. The two verses that come at the end of the fourth chapter. Now, what I might contextualize this a little bit. Krishna, in the beginning of the Rasalila, which is, the Rasalila, by the way, is known as the Sarva Lila Chudamani, the crown jewel of all Leelas by Vishwanatha Chakravarti, by Krishnadas Kaviraj, as Lila Sara, the essence of all Leelas. And this, of course, it culminates in the great dance of love between Krishna and his dearest Gopikas. So this is our celebration. We celebrate. When we look at Radha Madan Mohan, we're actually looking at the Ras Mandala, we're looking at the rasa dance, because each of the Vrajagopikas in that dance are but manifestations or embodiments of the emotions of Radha. So we have in Radha then all of the Vrajagopikas in one. And Krishna duplicates himself multiple times to attend to each one of those emotions. So in him, in Krishna, we have also all the duplicate Krishnas. So when you look at Radha Madan Mohan, you're looking at the Ras Mandala. And when you're looking at the Ras Mandala, you're looking at Radha Krishna. But the events leading up to that great mandala of dancers, the great mandala of eternal dancers, is an event where Krishna appears in the Vraja forest in the evening on a full moon night. Bhagavan apita ratri sharadot purlamallika vicharantu manaschakre yogamayam upashrataha. He is moved by the beauteous scene of the Vraja forest. He is so moved by it. So because he was so moved by it, he decided to make music on his flute. And when that flute plays, everything becomes transfixed on the sound of that flute. And that included the Vrajagopikas, who were then lured from their homes to come to the forest in the middle of the night and to be with Krishna. And even though Krishna plays a little hard to get in the forest initially, he eventually acquiesces, and they start playing in the forest and running around this beautiful paradisial scene of Vraja. And many of you have been to Vraja. Even today, there are still very beautiful parts of it, just exquisitely beautiful parts. But ostensibly, the gopis stopped and compared themselves to other women in the world by saying, "We are the most fortunate women in the whole world." At that moment, Krishna disappeared. And one would think, why did Krishna disappear? They were appreciating how fortunate they were. But here was the problem. They were comparing themselves to the other women. When we compare ourselves to others, we lose a sense of who we truly are. And this is very hard to do in a modern society where everything is so competitive. Everything is graded. I'm a professor, so I have to give A's, B's, C's, and D's. I hardly ever give F's. I'm a nice professor. Kind of a sucker for my students, but in any case. So Krishna disappeared, and the Vrajagopikas begin to long so desperately for Krishna's presence again, and he does finally show up in the fourth chapter, and they ask Krishna about the nature of love. And what is conditional love, what is unconditional love, and what is neutrality in relation to love. So these things you can read, and we don't have time for that now, but I do want to call your attention to where Krishna breaks his promise. He says, "Dear ladies, indeed for my sake alone, you have abandoned the world, the Vedas, and even your relatives out of love for me. It was out of love for you that I became invisible, though you were never removed from my sight. Therefore, you should not be discontented with me. Oh, dearest ones, I am your beloved." And then here is the breaking of Krishna's promise in the Bhagavad Gita, according to Krishnadas Kaviraj. "I am unable to reciprocate your faultless love for me, your own purity, and all that you have sacrificed for me, even over the lifetime of a great divinity, severing strong ties to your homes so difficult to overcome. You have lovingly worshipped me. May your reward be your own purity." So here's where Krishna says, your love for me is so amazing, I don't think I can reciprocate it. And yet he promises in the Gita that he will always reciprocate everyone's love. So we've got a problem here, folks. How is this problem solved? It is solved by the appearance of Mahaprabhu. You see, this Krishna Bhakti tradition is so exquisite. I teach comparative religions, and I really try to teach them exactly how Prabhupada, I feel, would want me to, by showing the bhakti elements within these traditions. Because they all have it, if you look deeply enough. They really do. It's amazing. Prabhupada was so discerning about this. These traditions have deep bhakti elements to them. But what we have in Mahaprabhu's gifts is something really incredible. We have all perhaps heard the Johannine expression, that is to say, the Gospel of John, where he says, God is love. How many of you have heard that statement? Yeah, God is love, right? And I don't think anyone in here could disagree with that. I think, Krishna is love. But we take it a little further. We reverse the statement as well. Love is God. Why? Because even love conquers Krishna, conquers Radha and Krishna. This is something that is so amazing, really amazing, and something upon which we must contemplate, especially on such a day as this. Because Radha's love for Krishna was excelling and expanding and intensifying so deeply to the point where it astonished and confounded Krishna. He felt he had to understand this love. So one of the internal reasons why Mahaprabhu appears is so Krishna can become his own bhakta. So he's known as Bhaktavatara. He is the embodiment of bhakti itself, of devotion to him. He wanted to find out, what is all this fuss? And so he becomes a devotee. But this is still a little external. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Radha Krishna Nahi Anya. It's stated in the Bengali. That Sri Krishna Chaitanya is none other than Radha Krishna combined. Now this becomes very esoteric. The internal reason for Mahaprabhu's appearance. We in Krishna Bhakti Chaitanya Vaishnava tradition, we certainly worship Krishna, Madan Mohan, as the supreme divinity. We certainly worship Sri Radha as the supreme, utterly supreme goddess. But we worship something even more than that. We worship their divine relation. We worship a relation. Love has conquered the two of them, and they want to understand this. And so that love becomes embodied in the person of Mahaprabhu. He is the combination of their love. So this is a very special kind of vision, very special kind of devotion. Krishna is known as Rasika Shekara. This phrase is repeated four times, only four times throughout the whole Chaitanya Charitamrita. And it means Shekara, like Shika, right? Shekara, the intensifying of the verb, of the vowel, I mean. Shika, Shekara. So Shekara means topmost. So Krishna wants to be the rasika, the experience. He wants to know the highest within the rasa. So he's known as Rasikashekara. But each time he climbs to the highest, he has yet still more to go. Because the nature of divine love is endless depth and breadth. And this is what is ever expanding. So sometimes we talk about perfection. We talk about devotional perfection. But really, we're talking about imperfection. Not in the sense of being flawed, but in the sense of never reaching an end point. And this is the nature of spirit in bhakti. So Krishna, so Mahaprabhu's appearance is to focus our attention on the love between Radha and Krishna. And so this is very, very special. Now, going back to Mahaprabhu, in the remaining minutes that we have, going back to Mahaprabhu historically, Mahaprabhu's behavior was very much characterized by, well, he was often called a madman. He would just go out in bursts. He would see a forest and he would run toward it, thinking it was Vrindavan. And whenever he saw a body of water, he thought it was the Yamuna. And whenever he saw a mountain, he thought it was... Something told me you knew what I was going to say. That's right. It is Govardhan. Yes, exactly. So, of course, the mountains and the forests and the bodies of water he would see were not Vrindavan. He would mistake them for Vrindavan. But you know what? They were Vrindavan, because there can't be a mountain that exists without it being coming from Govardhan. There isn't a forest that can exist without Vrindavan. And there isn't a body of water that can exist without Yamuna. So Mahaprabhu may be mad, but he was right. He was indeed correct in his madness. Now, in his madness, he would sometimes, even his body would form into unrecognizable formations. And in fact, a fisherman once dished him out of the ocean in his net and didn't even recognize him to be a human being. He was so deformed. Mahaprabhu taught us that love in Krishna bhakti can become so intense, it wears out the body. And ultimately, a bhakta, in this practice that Mahaprabhu gives us, with the leading theologians of his tradition, teaches us that eventually this body is just not going to be able to hold the love that we have for Radha and Krishna. We're going to have to burst out from it. That is Mahaprabhu's example. So Krishna bhakti, the intensity of love in Krishna bhakti becomes such that a bhakta welcomes eventually bursting out of this body, which we often call death, so we can just love more intensely. Now, it's not as though you'll be going around here on the property and see our bhaktas around here, you know, let me die. You know, I want to die now. It's not like that. Besides, that would be selfish. It's that the love will move a devotee into all kinds of behavior, and sometimes unconventional behavior, certainly like that of Mahaprabhu's. So Mahaprabhu taught us about the uncontainable level of prema, pure love. Now, there is love in all creatures. Animal life has love, and humans love, and we can love more purely or less purely. What Krishna, Mahaprabhu's tradition teaches us is that we can refine this love to such a level that is just a miraculous level of developing the heart. So this development of the heart is what we uniquely offer in Mahaprabhu's tradition. This develop of pure love, prema. Mahaprabhu displayed, however, the love that Radha had for Krishna. So it is called Mahabhava, Mahabhava, the greatest intensity of feeling. So we as souls, and I'll just finish up on this, but we as souls will never attain Mahabhava. Oh, that is only for Radha and only for Mahaprabhu. But we can attain Bhava. And we can taste, and here's the special, special gift that I want to leave all of you with. Why do we chant Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasati Gaura Bhaktavrinda before the Maha Mantra? See, there are plenty of people in India. Plenty, I mean, for hundreds and thousands of years, people have been chanting the Maha Mantra. But suddenly we chant the Panchatattva mantra before the Maha Mantra. And why do we do that? Let me explain how I understand it. And I've written about it in a book that's somewhere here. But anyway, it doesn't matter. The reason we do it is because Mahaprabhu's uncontainable love, where he couldn't even contain himself in his body, is like a geyser. Now, I've never been to Yosemite, but I hear there's a geyser there, right? Anyone been to Yosemite Park? Yeah, isn't it? There's a geyser, right? I think every 15 minutes, this... Oh, that's Yellowstone. Well, you can see I'm a real American here. And I'm not going to show you my birth certificate. In any case, in Yellowstone, there's a geyser, apparently, that every 15 minutes, is that correct? Or so?
Something like that.
Something like that. I have the authority here. Yeah. Okay? That's why he's sitting here. I asked him to. So, every so often, this geyser, the earth cannot contain this mineral water that bursts out into the sky. And that is like Mahaprabhu's love. That is the love, that is the prema, the Mahabhava of Mahaprabhu. And while we'll never have that kind of explosive divine Mahabhava, we are fortunate in this tradition to be able to be near enough to that geyser to receive the spray from that water, the waters of Mahabhava. And in doing so, while we bathe ourselves in that spray from the geyser of Mahaprabhu's Mahabhava, then we can enter the Maha Mantra just so sweetly, so intimately. And this is really the great gift of Krishna Bhakti that Mahaprabhu gave, is this intimacy, extraordinary intimacy with divinity, like no other tradition I know of personally. Many others approach it, but how special this is that we can stand and receive the spray from the geyser of Mahaprabhu's love. Thank you very much.